We had just buried my beloved grandfather the prior day. Before flying out to my home halfway across the country, I went to visit my grandmother in her room in a rehab center where she was recovering from a broken hip. As we sat alongside one another, largely in silence, a nurse entered and with a kind of false cheeriness exclaimed, "Oh, Mrs. Fox, your grandson has come to visit." She turned, looked at me, smirked, and then responded, "My grandson? This is my brother. He's here because our father just died." I smiled, gave a knowing wink to the nurse. It was a gesture betraying my even deeper sorrow. Having lost my grandfather just days before, the progression of my grandmother's dementia poured salt into the wounds of my grief. Now, I had lost my grandmother as well. Oh, she was still here, the woman I knew so well and loved so much. And yet, while she was still aware that our relationship was important to her, no longer could she remember what that relationship was. I wasn't her grandson. And by the time I'd make it back to see her again, it would be clear. Never again would she know herself as my grandmother. By a show of hands, how many of you have had a similar experience? Wow. Yep. A recent estimate suggests that 1 in 3 seniors will die with Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. Another study is now claiming a new case of Alzheimer's disease is diagnosed every 67 seconds. In this country. It's now one of the leading, one claim says, the third leading cause of death in the U.S. And too many of us know that it isn't just a disease of the old. It strikes in its cruelest capacity in a devastating early onset that steals years and years from those we love. In discussing this reality with Krista Tippett, psychologist Alan Dienstag conceded the world is broken. And people get broken too in the course of their lives. And that's the way the world is. He continues, it's not because somebody made it that way or somebody's being punished or anything like that. It's just a part of what's been bequeathed to us. Along with everything else. The world is broken. In deeply disturbing political, social, societal ways, the cracks are showing now, and we're all feeling newfound anxieties. But it's not just that the world and our nation and our state and our community are broken. Those we love are broken. We are broken. Our hearts are broken. All losses hurt. All losses break our hearts. Tragic, sudden deaths. Physically painful decline leading to death. death out of time, too soon, the too young, the unexpected. But today we acknowledge the hearts broken in this very room by those gradual, erratic, inconsistent, unpredictable losses that come one muddled conversation at a time, one panicked experience at a time, one paranoid phone call at a time, a few words missing here, a few objects missing there, a few names missing all along, and then a loss of recognition, of relationship, of reality. Each rough, chafing grain nicks us, stings us, before falling into some unseen scale that slowly, slowly, ever so slowly tips out of our favor. Today, with no right words, with no adequate salve, we simply sit in collective acknowledgement that for so many of us, life is broken. Our lives are broken in this very way. For those we have held dear, for those we now are holding dear, for some of us, in our own lives, Marilyn Nelson's somber sonnet sounds with pain-filled familiarity. How many things will I forget today? How many times stop still and ask myself, what was I going to do? In what new ways will my mind play tricks on me? And that question some of us know so very well, the one with no answer at all. How much can one forget and still remain? How much can one forget an actor's name, the novel I finished reading last night, where the damn car keys are, and still remain a bubble of identity riding a wave of light? When does the bow break and life as we've known it come crashing down in slow motion? The words, spoken and unspoken, found and lost, that say, you are no longer my grandson. You're no longer my daughter, my son. You're no longer my husband, my wife. You're no longer my friend. Anyone I recognize. Even if in an act of cruel comfort and comforting cruelty, life still continues. He occupies a relational place in my life, my heart, my soul, held by none other, ever. Not partner, though so much, in fact, that. Certainly not friend, so far beyond that. Not quite lover, though Richard was brilliant. Law review at Duke, partner in one of the world's largest law firms, bond counsel for the really, really big deals, the ones signed at the top of the World Trade Center, the ones that result in NFL stadiums and NBA arenas, the ones of such utter complexity that few knew how to do the deals. We connected immediately and deeply when I had just turned 30 and he was in his early 40s. Before long, we were spending more and more time together, dinners, runs, long nights over drinks, weekend getaways, then long trips to California. He was quirky, obstinate, cautious, and compassionate, caring, curious. We were an unlikely pair, a source simply of amusement for us. In the aftermath of another really stressful deal, a client registered a concern. The firm intervened, and Richard was sent to his embarrassment and fury for psychological testing. The results were inconclusive, but the hints were there. Early onset of Alzheimer's. He raged, denied. I colluded, denied for months, then a few years. I will never forget. Life had changed. I had moved away and he came for visits. I found the love of my life and he celebrated. And in a visit here with us, sitting in our kitchen, he told a story. Long, slow, painful with details in his lawyerly way. A few minutes passed. Some sips of coffee. Continued preparation for breakfast. And he began a story, long, slow, painful with details. The exact one he had told us, not a quarter of an hour earlier. The reality crashed in. I turned to hide my tears. My dear Richard, still in his 50s, was unraveling before my eyes. I knew then that the days ahead would be filled with pain. Some of you have read or watched that story as told by novelist Lisa Genova in Still Alice. The shock, the disbelief, the denial, not me, not us, too young, too soon. How can this be? Here's one thing I know, one thing I've learned. Jokes about failing memory aren't as funny to me anymore. Even self-deprecating jokes. I invite us to use care when mocking memory loss. For many of us who find it difficult to sort through the immense bank of experiences to locate the memory we're pursuing, it's an irritant, a challenge, akin perhaps to diminished eyesight. But for some, jokes about memory loss, jokes about mental incapacity, jokes about lack of cognitive functioning hit way too close to home. Mock the most painful parts of their lives. We must be sensitive and compassionate. Here's something else We rightly tout the rational quality of our particular religion. We rightly acclaim that ours is a religion that never, ever requires us to check our minds at the door or cross our intellectual fingers in some prevarication offered in the service of something else. We're thinking types, questioning types, askers, and deep reflectors. And that's just a part of who we are, collectively and individually. The inviolate worth and dignity we find in each other, in all others, cannot be tied to cognitive capacity. We must use care when describing what matters most, what is most important. We cannot, we must not value the rational, the intellectual, the cognitive in ways that become exclusive, judgmental even. The stone barely shifted at first. Then the movement became more evident. There was diminishment, compromised cognitive capacity. But Richard was still Richard. We still talked. We still laughed. But as it picked up speed, it started destroying everything in its path. Richard lost his job, his driver's license, his independence, his mobility, his freedom, his home, his dignity, lost his way completely, and then he lost his life. I return to offer the eulogy at his memorial service. With a heart as heavy as it has ever been, with so many questions and so few answers and so much love. You've been there. Some of you. You are there. Today, in ways I cannot say about other things, I can at least suggest to you that I have some sense of how you feel. That said, for some who face this in every single waking moment, yours is a brokenness that none can truly know. All we can say is, we care. We care. And so do you. You care without reciprocity. Wondering perhaps what, if any, good it does. It does good beyond what you can imagine. My dear colleague Roger Jones puts it so well on this topic, none of our contributions is lost. They all become a part of the unfolding creation. Every gift of music or poetry, every meal cooked and enjoyed, every kind word, every loving touch, every moment, these gifts are everlasting parts of creation. Bless you, caregivers. Bless your contributions. What I know for certain is that none of us knows for certain. When there is so little reaction, so little acknowledgement. We cannot know what difference we are making, but studies show, and more importantly, experiences reveal that often words are heard, music is heard, caring is felt, caring is received in ways beyond what we can perceive. Keep caring. Keep talking. Keep loving. Keep touching. Always, always mindful that you must care for yourself if you are going to have anything to offer another. Now, it is closer. My grandmother's daughter is following in her mom's footsteps. The ties that bind my own mom's mind are slowly unraveling. It started with aphasia, the loss of an occasional word. It became more apparent, less easily ignored or avoided. My dad and I discussed it on our baseball trips. He admitted and denied. He exaggerated and equivocated. Late last year, in a conversation, Mother described a recent visit she'd gotten. It was, she said, you know, her. Her? Oh, you know, the one who comes to see me. I realized. She's no longer able predictably to call my own sister's name. The relationships are fraying. Her mind wandering off down pathways we cannot follow. We lose a little bit of her each time we talk or see her now. My yesterdays, Alice Howland says in Lisa Genova's novel, my yesterdays are disappearing, and my tomorrows are uncertain. And then wonders, so what do I live for? And an answer that is just a bit too tidy, too cinematic, but laden with truth and with hope, she concludes, I live for each day. I live in the moment, but just because I'll forget it some tomorrow doesn't mean that I didn't live every second of it today. I will forget today, but that doesn't mean that today doesn't matter. We all know that at some level. All todays will be lost in time. None of this lasts. None of us last. The relationships in our lives where cognitive capacity is compromised serve as stark and undeniable reminders. As such, maybe they also serve, strangely, as gifts. I don't mean that in some banal way, some everything happens for a purpose and it's all so wonderful kind of way. We have today. Even if yesterday is lost entirely, we have today. Some who have no yesterdays and many fewer tomorrows need our care, our presence, our abiding commitment to their worth and to their dignity. It is not easy. It is one of the most difficult evidences of life's brokenness. This is at least to acknowledge that, to name that challenge. We are broken. We are broken. But we are not broken alone.